Right now, I have the great privilege to conduct an interview with Lawrence E. Joseph, the author of a newly released book entitled Apocalypse 2012, A Scientific Investigation into Civilization's End. Mr. Joseph, thanks for allowing me to interview you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Brian.
As some of my listeners might already know, I've been talking about your book on my last two podcasts, but who better than the author to help us out? Can you tell us a little bit about this book?
Sure enough, I stumbled into it quite accidentally and, in fact, reluctantly. I'm chairman of the board of Aerospace Consulting Corporation, which is a very small, high-technology company specializing in plasma physics research. And our principal scientist, Dr. Roger Remy, kept bugging me, saying that the sun is making mayonnaise, which didn't mean anything to me, but in his French vernacular means the sun was having a breakdown or behaving erratically. And Roger, leave me alone. Don't bother me with this. But his specialty is plasma physics, and the sun is a great ball of plasma, essentially pure energy in gaseous form. So I couldn't dismiss it entirely. And after a few months of him insisting that I pay attention, I went to a couple of websites at NASA and European Space Agency mostly, and saw that indeed the number of sunspots and therefore storms on the sun and ejections from the sun around the solar system and particularly heading towards Earth was much higher than had been predicted, and the storms were not only more powerful but behaving in ways that had not heretofore been observed. And about the only thing that solar physicists could agree upon was that the next climax in solar activity, stronger and more storms and more mass ejections hitting the Earth, 2012. That alone didn't mean anything to me other than, you know, I didn't know where to go with that until one evening I don't like the verb Googled, I Yahooed 2012 and found out that ancient Mayan prophecy based on some very, very solid astronomy had for about 1,500 years singled out the year 2012 as either the end of time or the beginning of time or a radical transformation, but nonetheless the year. And the coincidence in contemporary solar physics and ancient Mayan prophecy caught me, and I figured it would be imprudent to ignore it. So that's how the book got started.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found it eye-opening just how many things seemingly culminate in the year 2012 in your book, like your sunspot activity and the Mayan calendars, and it seems like a dozen different cultures have something to do with that year. Is there something that you were told about, or maybe the date just kept popping up during your research, and is that the reason you wrote the book?
Well, after finding the coincidence between the sunspots and the ancient Mayan prophecy, the date 2012 did keep popping up, and at first I was skeptical because there's always the chance that it's kind of a bandwagon effect, that the latest interpretation of something proves that it's been, you know, the Kabbalah says 2012. I mean, I you have to be skeptical and you have to be hard-nosed about things like that. Nonetheless, there were certain findings that couldn't be ignored. Michael Drosnin's book, The Bible Code, which is a huge bestseller and pretty had a rigor at the bottom of it. He found that the year 2012 was encoded for Earth annihilated, and basically that book examines the original text of the Bible like a big acrostic, and when words cross, there's significance imputed to it. And since he's made some pretty good predictions out of that, you know, you couldn't ignore it entirely. So Earth annihilated in 2012 did seem pretty appropriate to investigation. And then another longer, I guess it's probably 25 years ago, that Terence McKenna examined the I Ching and independently, apparently, concluded that the I Ching pointed to the end of time as coming on December 22nd, 2012, a day off from the Mayan calendar, but still close enough to to pay attention to. So these things were all alarming, but frankly, the one that confirmed it the most for me was a prediction made by a Russian physicist, Dr. Alexei Dmitriev. He did not pick the year 2012, but in 1997 he predicted that global catastrophe of the kind that is often associated with predictions for 2012 would come in not ones but tens of years, not tens but ones of years, excuse me. So he was talking 2010, 2015, something close enough to 2012 that, again, I was disinclined to ignore it. And may I explain his theory?
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Dr. Dmitriev has written that our entire solar system is moving into interstellar energy cloud, and he cites voluminous satellite data examining the atmospheres of the outer planets and also the behavior of the sun as evidence that there are energy injections causing greater storms than have ever been observed, say, on Saturn, or arcing between Jupiter and its moons, or just phenomena that had never been observed nor predicted are explained by this movement into an energy cloud. And at first, you know, he lives in Siberia, and at first, okay, some guy in Siberia is predicting doom. Whatever. I probably would, too, if I was in Siberia. I dismissed the idea of it, but frankly, his writing was very cogent, and I liked the way he used his sources, and he had a certain academic restraint.
And it seemed like you had kind of a hard time getting together with him at first.
Oh, this guy ducked me for months and months, and I hired a Russian interpreter to place calls and emails, and I'd get these responses from his wife like he's out watching thunderstorms. He'll be back in a month. So I'm getting a runaround from this guy. But finally, through the interpreter and my meetings, I arranged to go see him in Akadem Gorodok, which is a town in Siberia outside of Novosibirsk, which is the capital city of Siberia. And from Los Angeles to Siberia is quite a trip.
I'll bet.
And I got to Moscow and checked in my hotel where I was going to spend a few days, and I received a message saying that he would do his best to keep our appointment. And I was like, if I fly halfway around the world and this guy flakes on me, I'm going to be really mad. But at least I'll have the consolation of dismissing him and therefore dismissing or decreasing the likelihood that 2012 will be as disastrous as evidence seems to indicate. But I made it to Akadem Gorodok, and I found out that it's its own great story. It was a scientific research city founded after Stalin fell about 50 years ago. The Soviets founded it to sequester any of their top military scientists, particularly physicists, wanted to send those guys, and in the Soviet system, women as well, away from the West so that the West couldn't spy on what they were doing and also so these folks couldn't defect to the West.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't exile. It was the facilities were state-of-the-art. Their living conditions in terms of apartments and amenities were better than just about any place else. They had more intellectual freedom. So when I got there, I found that this place had a 50-year tradition of excellent science that was almost completely classified as military work, but in recent years has become declassified as the country moves into the free market system, and frankly, as the military cannot pay its bills, sort of information is becoming declassified because people are going out and selling it because they have to pay their way in life.
Right.
When I finally caught up to Dr. Dmitriev, I realized why he had been ducking me. We were at a conference where he was the celebrity scientist, and all these professors from around Russia and around Europe were sidling up to him, trying to get him to look at their research articles, trying to get an autograph on his latest book. And that was both confirming, because it was, okay, this man is a legitimate scientist. He has a coterie around him of admirers and people who are expanding on his work.
Mm-hmm.
And also disturbing, because lots of people think this guy is right, and that we are passing into an energy cloud, and Earth is being affected in two very important ways by this. One, directly, as our global ecosystem passes into energy, area where there's more energy, you add energy to a system and it must react. The storms must become stronger. Earthquakes and volcanoes must have more strength. It must be more violent because there's just more energy in the system. And the other way that the cloud is affecting us is that it's affecting the sun, which affects us. We are as plugged into the sun as your television is plugged into the wall. So when the sun is upset, either for whatever reason, so are we.
Well, now, in your book, you were talking about how during a solar minimum we had great activity on the sun affecting us, and in 2012 we're going to be at a solar maximum, right. And with the addition of extra energy through this galactic cloud or this energy cloud that the solar system's passing through, that might even increase even more.
It seems to me that it has to have some either additive or even multiplier effect, and I am really worried about that. And you bring up a very important point. During what was very close to a solar minimum, basically the solar cycle is about 11 years, it's a cycle, and we were in 2005 entering the minimum when we're supposed to have very few sunspots of very low intensity. And instead, in September 2005, we had a week of enormous, wild activity, unprecedented. And guess what? Right before then was Hurricane Katrina. Right after then was Rita, Stan, Wilma. That period of solar activity was bracketed by the greatest, most furious hurricane period probably we've ever known on Earth, or certainly within record. Did anybody mention that? I mean, with all the coverage we had of those storms then and subsequently, have you ever heard anyone say, hey, guess what? During that time, the sun was storming as wildly as the Earth was. Storms on the sun are connected to storms on the Earth.
Well, you know, you didn't hear that in the mainstream media, that connection, but as in your book, you stated that information was available.
Absolutely available. And this is one of the things I love about agencies like NASA and European Space Agency. They just lay the data out there, the minimum of interpretation, but it's satellite stuff comes in. I'm sure that some of it is sequestered or kept confidential, and that's fine, you know. I mean, the powers that...
You mean like the life they find from the rover's pictures?
you never know what, you know, you never know what they're holding back, but I am impressed as to how much it's the saying, hidden in plain sight. But it was amazing.
Yeah, you just never know. And like you said, they don't put their interpretation on it. That's left for later on, or for yourself or myself to make heads or tails of it.
And that's our job.
Well, no one wants to think that the world's going to end on his or her shift. Did you try to disprove this, or did you try to prove it to yourself first?
I tried to see what was valuable, because frankly, I don't believe that the world was going to end on December 21st, 2012. I do not believe that, for the record.
Even now, after writing the book?
No, I don't. Because, for one thing, I'm emotionally incapable of believing that. It is far too vast a possibility and too hairy a concept for my little mind. And particularly because I have two young children. And that makes it, I'm 53, I've had a good life, believe me, I want another 53, but just contemplating that possibility as affecting my children, it's an emotional limitation, I simply go tilt.
Well, that's exactly my position. I have a son, he's only 2.5, he's going to be just over 8 in 2012, and I'm glad that you said that, because it sounds like you really are skeptical that this might happen.
Yes, but I'll tell you what I believe. I think it's better than a 50-50 chance that 2012 will be a Lulu. And I mean standing out among all years that any of us have ever experienced, or perhaps even recorded in history, as a year of great tumult and catastrophe. And also perhaps the beginning of a dawning of an age of enlightenment. I'm sorry to say that in my cozy little existence right now, if offered the opportunity to experience the divine, or just keep safe the way I am, I'd probably, you know, keep safe. It's another shortcoming of mine. But especially with kids, I've noticed one becomes more conservative. You know, it's like, I'll just, you know, let them go to preschool, dear Lord.
yeah.
And, you know, so it may well be. And in fact, I spent a week in Guatemala working with these Mayan shamans who are completely optimistic about the outcome of 2012.
So they think something's going to happen, but they're optimistic about what will happen after that.
Yes, they, it's and the analogy that always comes comes up is it's the birth of a new era, and birth, as we all know, is accompanied by blood and pain. And you know, they firmly expect that there will be a lot of blood and pain and chaos, but out of that will come a hastening of our evolution towards enlightenment. And I hope they're right. Again, if I could choose to skip the blood and pain and therefore the enlightenment, that's what I would take.
Well, it seems like that happens all the time. Whenever Microsoft decides to change their operating system, and now we're in this new enlightened era of their new operating system, there's always blood and pain.
Yes, yeah, there is. And may it be limited to the computer crashes and glitches and not to something much, much, much greater. I mean, the catastrophe is really one of the, it's probably the evolutionary organizing principle of the global ecosystem. My first book was on the Gaia hypothesis, which studies the Earth as a living organism. And what happens with disturbing regularity is every 62 to 65 million years, there's a catastrophe of the scale that wiped out the dinosaurs and 70% of all other living species.
And you say that we're at like 67,
yeah,
right now.
That was another one. Dr. Paul Muller of California Berkeley, who was a graduate student of Luis Alvarez, discovered that it was an impact that extincted the dinosaurs. Muller and his graduate student, Rohde, spent years studying the best fossil record we have available, going through artifact after artifact and using carbon dating and all sort of related techniques, and came up with what is deemed by outside evaluation as 99% statistical certainty that every 62 to 65 million years, a cataclysmic impact destroys 70 and 90% of all Earth.
Well, so that has really nothing to do with what we were talking about. That's like an asteroid you're talking about.
Or some cyclical comet activity from the Oort cloud or something like that. There's a lot of speculation on what causes it. 99% statistically certain.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen in 2012.
Well, yeah.
If we're already overdue, it'd be hard to predict that. But, you know, NASA's budget, they've even come out and said that they might have the technology to actually see one coming, but we don't have the money to look for the next big one.
Yeah, I mean, God love NASA. I would certainly love to see them get that funding, but I'm not sure that have the money to do anything about it, and it also depends how far in advance they could pick it up. That seems to me an area of uncertainty. If they could pick it up a couple of days in advance, it's not going to do us much good. If they could pick
right.
it up a couple of years, perhaps there's something.
Well, I'm wondering, how long did you take to research the book?
Actually, it wasn't so long. It was about a year, and I traveled a lot for it. I mentioned I went to Siberia for a week and then Guatemala. And I also went to South Africa to a place called Hermanus, which is known as the whale-watching capital of the world. It's a beautiful place, but it's also a spot for an electromagnetic observatory, which has been monitoring the depletion and, frankly, cracks in the Earth's magnetic field. Apparently, California-sized cracks are opening up at random, or at least in a way that we cannot yet predict, in our protective magnetic field, which this in general is bad news because the magnetic field shelters us from solar radiation and outbursts such as a sunspot might hurl at us. And it's particularly bad news since we're heading towards a solar climax in 2012. The last thing we want is our shields to be down when the Romulans are beginning to fire, and it's not that far-fetched an analogy.
Now, does this have something to do with what you were talking about in your book about the poles shifting?
Yes, it's all of a piece. I mean, clearly the North Pole has been shifting rapidly and moving erratically. There seems to be an emerging consensus that it presages a pole shift where eventually the North Pole will become south and the south will become north. That's a process that can take thousands of years. The problem is, in the meantime, as the shift occurs, overall Earth's magnetic field weakens. And the consequences of that are anything from, again, rendering us vulnerable to solar radiation and whatever else, cosmic radiation and also directly from the sun, solar radiation, and also confusing the heck out of fish and birds and whales and really disrupting the ecosystem in a major way.
Yeah, there was a NOVA special, I think, on the pole shifting. They've done that several times, I guess, in the Earth's history.
Yes, they have. We seem to be in the early stages of when the question no one can seem to answer is how advanced or how far along are we and how quickly will this take place? My concern is not so much to discern that, but to say, next 5 years, are we going to be down 10%? And if the solar climax, solar climax of 2012 has already been predicted by the National Center for Atmospheric Research to be up to 50% greater than any climax we've seen. So we're going to have stronger storms and weaker protection in 5 years. You know, a little red flag I'm waving here.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I went to your webpage for the book, and it's been available since late January. Have you received much attention or comment on it, and are you doing many interviews and appearances?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have. The book is already sold to 10 languages. I'm very proud of that. And that's pretty rare for a writer who's not well-known. I've been getting a lot of radio, print, particularly in Canada and England. I just got 5,000 word extract from the London Daily Mail, which I believe is the largest circulation newspaper in England.
Great.
And we had a kind of a freaky thing happen. A friend shot some videos of me talking about the book, and we went to a caldera, a supervolcano up in Northern California, and shot there, and went to Death Valley, and went to a few other places. And posted the videos like anybody else can do on YouTube and GoFish and AOL videos. Two of them took off. One of the videos, it was about a minute and a half, had over 1 million plays, and the second one had almost 500,000. And
great.
These are numbers that usually reserved for, I mean, you know, Britney Spears or, you know, people, someone who's well known and who people are bringing interest to anyway. And my face has never motivated such interest before. And I'm sure that it hasn't now, but it indicated.
Well, you didn't take off your clothes or anything in this video, did you?
Oh, it's stripped down and. but no. It's just, you know, it was fun. It was a minute and a half, 2 minutes. You know, one of those things you click on and just sort of enjoy, or at least are absorbed by. But there's a latent, there's some pent up demand to know about 2012. Thus far, I'm very happy. I'm very happy with the sales of the book, too.
Well, are you going to be taking some time off, or are you planning another book? Remember, you only have 5 years left.
Well, you know what? This book is still my project. I almost feel, almost unfaithful thinking about another book, because this one, every day I have something to do with it. But I have a strong vision that what I'm going to do is follow it up. I'd like to look at the day after. Not the day after per se, but I'd like to give us some scenarios of what if 2012, as I call it, the middle case scenario. And not, you know, the great off switch in the sky is not flicked and, you know, we don't all just perish, but neither is 2012 go by like any other year. But some middle case scenario, I'd like to paint, imagine what that would be and see what we could do best to prevent it if possible, react to it, carry on.
Well, that's good. I'm going to read a small section from towards the end of your book. I thought that was a good way to end kind of this little podcast interview.
Okay.
Is 2012 just one big excuse to party like it's 1999? The logic is pretty powerful. If December 21st, 2012 does indeed represent the end of time or some awesome approximation thereof, what better way to ring out the old and ring in the new with a bottle of champagne in one hand and your main squeeze in the other? Whether the moment is wonderful, horrible, or a big fat dud, we can keep the party going through Christmas and New Year and then sober up sometime in January when we're all fat, broke, and old. I got a couple of people laughing when I read that to them.
I appreciate you reading that.
Well, so if Mr. Joseph has sparked your interest in the year 2012, go out and get his book, Apocalypse 2012, A Scientific Investigation into Civilization's End from Morgan Road Book. I want to thank Jason Gordon from Precedent Media Unlimited for arranging this interview, and I want to thank you, Mr. Lawrence E. Joseph, for your time and consideration.
I very much enjoyed it.
All right. This is Brian the Brain Guy.